Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Monte Carlo may be a tax haven, but it wasn't a climate haven today. 2-hour delayed start to the action on day three. Some navigated the turbulent weather better than others as we continue our road to Roland Garros coverage. Here's what's coming up on the show. Greatest player of his generation has won twice here in the Principality, but his form at the principal events this year has been a little un-Novak, but his eyes are most definitely on the prize. He came, he saw, he hit, he left. What we feared for the last 48 hours was confirmed. Sadly, Carlos Alcaraz won't play in Monte Carlo. We'll explain why. And we say hi to a career high, to an American who's been in fantastic form in the past 12 months on court when she hasn't been moonlighting here at Tennis Channel. Welcome to the TC Live studios here in Santa Monica. Delighted to say Paul Annacone did put his running shoes on. And a big welcome over here to the Hall of Famer, Andy Roddick. And boys, while I've got your attention right at the top here, little trivia question. Of course, we still have one American left in the draw in Monte Carlo. Can you tell me who was the last American to even make the final here? Of course, you haven't had a winner in the Open era.
Andy, I'm going to yield to your expertise. As usual.
It's a big prize on this.
Yeah, Paul, that's exactly what I would do if I didn't know the answer as well. I don't know. I don't even want to guess. Let's go with a Stan Smith. Did he make the finals of anything on clay ever? Is it too old? I don't know. I have no idea.
A little too old, but Aaron Krikstein back in 1992. Little VHS of one of my big wins against Jan Krosnick on court 18 at Wimbledon is safely still a family heirloom. Unfortunately, it's not going to be heading your way, Andy.
That's fine. I can live with that. That's okay.
Right, let's get back into the action. Let's head over to Monte Carlo, one of the three sovereign principalities in the world, and of course home to the king of tennis, Novak Djokovic, a two-time Monte Carlo champion. But he has been stung in recent times with some early losses. And this is what has happened. The fatalities in the Principality, of course. Dirple Dan in the third round of 2021. Davidovic Fokina, is there a player out there with a bigger delta between his absolutely devastating best and his disastrous performance at times? And a bit of magic from Musetti last year in 2023 as Paul Annacone takes you through his performance today.
Yeah, we didn't know what to expect. Jason Goodall and I had a long chat about it. Jason didn't expect him to play that well today. I told Jason he was going to be wrong. I told him that Novak was going to play extremely well. And he was very buttoned up from the beginning, guys. Really just spot on with everything, with the movement, pressured the returner serve incredibly well. Every second serve, he was all over Safulin. Safulin started to overplay very early on in the match, and Novak did what he always does. Guys, he's hitting the ball down the line over 50% of the time in the rallies in this match. So Safulin didn't get any patterns, was backed up, was on his heels, and for that man, it was a good start.
Yeah, it was a great start, and he caught up with Prakash afterwards.
Novak, you're of course always playing for history, but this year I'm sure the big milestones, you'll be looking for that 25th major, you'll be looking for the Olympics. Which one of those is higher on your list?
Well, it's an Olympic year, so Olympic years are very rare. I come every 4 years, and I, like any Olympic year, I really put Olympics right up there in terms of priority. Of the tournaments where I want to excel and play my best, other than slams, you know, that's the highest priority. And I think that block between Roland Garros, Wimbledon, Olympics, and US Open, those 2-3 months is where I want to play my best tennis. So hopefully that's going to happen.
Andy, quickly, obviously, when you set the bar as high as Novak, the wins are expected, the losses, I guess, are more magnified. Where's he at?
Yeah, I got a chuckle out of some of the stats that were shown and Paul Annacone going. It's like, he struggled in Monte Carlo. Like, one of the things I take pride in my career is having a win percentage of like 73%. That's his worst master series, is winning this term at 73% of his matches and winning it twice. I thought he looked fantastic start to finish. Was doing what we expect of Novak, right? He's making, you know, the impossible look mundane, right? Not missing any second serve returns, putting on the person's shoe tops in the middle of the court. Then he can direct traffic line or cross court. When he's kind of hitting that shuffle forehand where he's on the stretch, when he can fire that line flat, I'm not sure where you actually shade on the court. I think Novak almost will revel in the fact that Sinner has been so good this year. I think that almost makes him go hard reset. And this looked vintage today.
Yeah, I think it's always amazing with great players because I think they pride themselves on challenges. And now he's got a big challenge. And basically, at this stage in his career, he tends to only make news when he loses. That's a tough position to be in. He doesn't have a lot of match reps this year, which is making it a little bit challenging for him. So it's really tough to weigh how good he is. But when you look how good he's playing, but when you look at what he did today, it looks like he's right on stride. The second serve return is just relentless. But to me, what's most astonishing about him is even on clay courts where the footing is a little bit more slick, he's able to change direction so liberally in the rallies, goes down the line off of balls that normally you don't think you can get away with, does things that pushes you deep in the court really early on. And like Andy said, directs traffic so easily. It's just tough to get comfortable against him.
Yeah, it was tough, and it's going to be tougher whoever's up next against him. A couple of players that have something that Novak doesn't have in 2024 are these two players. Hubie Hurkacz picking up his eighth title, but more importantly, his first title on the clay courts, and Berrettini back in the winner's circle with a new accessory since Queens of 2022. And it was Hurkacz, Andy, up against Jack Draper.
Yeah, a great effort last week from Hurkacz, beating Martinez in the final of Estoril. You never question Hubie doesn't get enough credit. He shows up every single week, and the forehand can go a little bit, and it was the racket. It was the racket patch. Obviously, he switched that one out and got right back to business, but credit to Draper for fighting back when Hurkacz was serving the match out. Obviously, Hubie has one of the bigger serves on tour. It's got to be top 2, 3, 4 in the world. Right now, Draper wanting some love after that, but kind of forgot that he had to get back to work in this breaker. And credit to Hubie, even though that forehand went AWOL a little bit during that third set, was still went for his shot and played the right ball when it presented himself, found his range in this third set buster. And this is what happens when you get match tough. You go through these third set breakers, you play good tennis, you're able to step up regardless of the situation, and Hubie did a great job fighting through this one. Might not have been the best player for most of the afternoon on court, still got through.
Yeah, he's used to those. 14 of his matches last year went to a deciding set tiebreaker, and then Berrettini. Well, he brought good form, Andy, but perhaps not the energy you need.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Berrettini coming in with a hot hand off of a win in Marrakesh last week, which lends itself to thinking he's going to win this, right, Petch? Right?
No.
No. Didn't quite work out that way. When you haven't played a ton of matches, backing up a physical win with another week of going deep into a tournament, always a big ask. Khachmanovic knew that. Made Berrettini play every single ball today. Asked the question, said, are you still there physically? I'm afraid the question, at least for this week, was a big no for Berrettini, but he'll be able to shake this one off pretty quickly. Obviously, you take the title, you take the progress that has been made, you take that ranking being back in the top 100 at 84 in the week, 84 in the world coming into this week, and Khachmanovic looked as good as he has start to finish in the match for a little while now.
Yeah, he needed a bit of confidence handed to him by Berrettini as we take a look forward to somebody that knows his way around these courts, a runner-up in 2022 up against the American Seb Korda.
Guys, I was a little shocked by this. I thought Seb had a good opportunity out here, but man, oh man, this was just a highlight reel. He played power tennis, was able to absolutely pummel Davidovich Fokina's serve. He won over almost 60% of Davidovich Fokina's first serve points. And when you do that, you kind of relieve the pressure on your own serve. You're able to hit big from the back of the court. He broke 5 times. He was the one that was dictating with those flat, powerful groundies from the back of the court. Forehand was on track. That's the one that can slide once in a while, gets behind Sebi can make some mistakes, but I tell you what, this is hopefully a glimpse of things to come throughout the rest of the clay court year and the rest of the year for that man, because he played a high-quality tennis match. 1-2, that's a big effort.
Yeah, maybe taking a bit of inspiration from his sister, who's won 4 in a row on the LPGA. Where does Stan get his inspiration from, Andy? He looked flatter than a packet from IKEA.
Yeah, this, you know what, he just made Paul Anacone's prediction from yesterday.
I knew you were going to remember that.
It's just a rough one. I have a great memory. I can remember a whole 24 hours behind me. But Dimonor, to his credit, I think he's normally a better mover on hard than he is in the clay. I don't think it does it any favors when he's this fast, but he moved around great today. Conversely, I think Steam struggled a little bit in the heavy conditions. It seemed like he was having a hard time getting in and out of the corners, which meant Dimonor was hitting to open space a lot. Right here, as an example, doesn't even go for that drop shot. Credit to Dimonor. He smothers you right now, right? Making you play every single point, not making a lot of errors, moving the ball around the court. You see him take that one up the line, and Stan, again, struggled getting out of those corners. But it's been a heck of a year for Dimonor, and it continues.
It most certainly does, and it will be certainly interesting to keep an eye on the Aussie on this surface, although he grew up in Spain, not always his favourite. This, however, is a Spanish man that does love this surface, but unfortunately, as we've been saying, that strapping's been on his forearm for the entire week. Pronator teres is the problem. It is basically the forearm muscle. Primary function is to pronate, clearly going to be a problem for a tennis player, and assist in forearm flexion. We've been seeing him just tap balls around over the course of the last couple of days, and honestly, Paul, just seems like the right decision was made ultimately.
Yeah, look, he knows how he feels, how bad it is. It's a long year, and it's a long clay court season. This is the first big one of 3 big ones before Roland Garros even starts. So he's got to be smart. Just a little bit disconcerting that it's starting now. You know, I didn't see anything in Miami. I don't know if you guys
not
did,
too.
Andy. I don't know
no.
if you noticed anything in Miami. So I'm not sure where it flared up. Always tough for me when it's starting at the beginning of a chain of tournaments. So smart thing, when in doubt, sit it out for a little bit, especially while you're this young. He's got plenty of time. And now what he can do actually is just focus on some of the physical training stuff away from the court, which I think is actually more important for a young player of his skill set, so that he has enough time to get ready and then just play some good tennis when it matters most.
Yeah, and my best guess, Petch, is that there's no chance that there's something wrong structurally if he traveled to Monte Carlo and if he is trying to hit. You know, he's been talking about his forearm for 2-3 days now. This is the smart thing to do, right? Especially when you have a Ferrari and the gas tank is empty. Let's take a play off. Let's go fill that back up and get ready for the rest of the clay court season. You know, there have been some injury concerns, maybe more than you see with someone his age, but I think this is the smart move.
Yeah, everyone in agreement. It's a smart move. Good to see. Hopefully Alcaraz will be back before too long. He's obviously one of the big mega stars in the men's tour. Another one of those stars that's been around for seemingly ever is Gael Monfils. What can the Frenchman, the magic man, do today? Did he have a bag of tricks? He did, and he certainly needed them. It was an extraordinary match. That's coming up next.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Picture postcards from this beautiful part of the world. Yeah, Monte Carlo hosting once again the Masters 1000. as everybody looking to try and get their clay court campaigns up and running. What have we got for you on T2 tomorrow? We've got a bit of Echeverri up against Tsitsipas, a two-time winner here, the Greek star, and that gets underway at 8 a.m. Eastern time, and then Casper Ruud will take on Tabilo for the second time in their career. They met in Santiago back in 2020. That's a first-time meeting with Echeverri and Tsitsipas. T2 with Leif Shiras and Jan Michael Gamble as Paul takes us through Zverev and Hofner.
Boy, nice day for Sasha Zverev. Look at the little field volley right here. Beautiful job on the low backhand volley. Got off to a really good start, dictating from the back of the court, and he lulled Hofner into some of these lateral baseline points, and if that's the way the tennis is going to go, it's going to be one-way traffic, and that's what it was the first set for Sasha Zverev. Big forehand here, comes in, gets the missed passing shot to seal the deal in the first set. Second set, he was even more efficient from the back of the court, able to use some of the long levers to slide into shots. How about this one right here? Just a beautiful two-hander down the line, just that laser. Had the insurance break, which he needed in the second set. Was up a double break. Hofner gave a little bit of a pushback, but then it was Zverev at 5-4 just to close things out. Just a nice effort from him. Really good job playing today.
Yeah, he's long odds at the moment at the French Open. He may shorten those over the next couple of weeks. And then the battle of the South American dirt ballers.
Yeah, this was I'll tell you what, Echeverri played some great tennis the first set. Really, he's doing a good job. And Jerry's a tough guy to deal with from the back of the court because he hits the ball so flat through the court. Really difficult to stay with him. Echeverri did that, sealing the deal in the first set. Excuse me, folks. And then the second set, a little bit different. Jarry's the one here up 2-1. His ad early on, he was starting to make some inroads with the big flat groundies, but that one, an unforced error. It goes the length here in the second set. Echeverri, once again, a little bit more solid in the big moments, gets that break at 6-5 and just plays a little bit better tennis here down the end. First set, it was really Echeverri out in front the whole time. Second set, not much between them, but a good job for him to get through in straights.
Yeah, an important win for him. As we flip it through, Andy, you've got one of the largest vocabulary on the tour, one of the highest tennis intellect. Make sense of this match for me.
Good luck.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Pat. Super smart here. Thank you. Listen, and Monfils was supposed to play Jordan Thompson, who had to check out with a back injury. So Vukic getting the last minute entry and making the kind of the most of it here. Coming out, maybe not expecting to play. Don't know if he knew that he was going to play when he woke up this morning. Making the most out of that first set, sneaking it out. But Monfils, you give him a crowd and he will show you how to play to them. The acrobatics that Paul Anacone loves right there look like a
baby.
That looked like Anacone movement if I have ever seen it in my life. Listen, Monfils down 4-1 in the third, kind of grabbing at his hips and his back, which obviously means that he's going to run out 16 in the next 18 points to take control. Here we are at match point. You could hear when we were watching the other match, Lamont circus in full flight. That one was a mannequin maker to finish. He says, go away. I don't know who he's looking at, but he didn't want him there anymore.
He is something just special, isn't he? He may not have taken the major title that the French tennis would have loved to have seen from him, but he has given us so much through the decades that he's been on tour.
It's unbelievable. I mean, Jason and I are watching him out of the corner of the eye on one of our monitors while we're calling another match, and he's bent over, he's gasping for air in the first set. You know, and it goes on and on and on. 5-4 in the first set tiebreak, makes three bad drop shot mistakes, shot selection decisions, loses the first set, comes back and wins the second, then gets down 4-1 in the third, can't even breathe, so we're paying no attention. Then all of a sudden we hear everybody yelling in the background. 30 seconds later, 16 out of 18 points.
Yeah.
The guy is just incredible. I mean, it's so much fun to watch. And that little monologue I just stated, that, folks, is why you don't want to coach Gael Monfils, but that's why you do want to watch him. He's amazing.
He's something special. And when he looks back in the rearview mirror at the end of his career, you feel like there's going to be any regrets for him at all, or do you feel as though he's going to look back and go, that was just me?
Yeah, I don't know that I've met a tennis player yet that doesn't have some regret about anything. You know, listen, I was shocked for a while. I actually told him when it was 2009, we were practicing. I said, I don't know how you don't have a single digit next to your name every single year, right? You serve better than pretty much all of us. You cover more court than all of us. You're more consistent than all of us. You know, but listen, that's also what makes him entertaining. You know, the fact that you can relate to him and relate to his struggles. And then all of a sudden, you know, like Paul said, it's fun for everyone in the world except for Vukic. When you think he's down and out, something's bothering him, and you know, all of a sudden, 2 games later, he's sprinting like a deer around the court and hitting winners. Frustrating to be on the other side of, but listen, fun for us to watch.
Yeah, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch against Daniil Medvedev. He's not exactly not volatile at times, so but he does like the clay these days. Medvedev, winner in Rome last year. These are some of the other results. Disappointment for Marcus Giron going down in a much-needed win for Zhang, who's a little tight trying to serve that one out. Batista Agut getting his clay court campaign up and running, and we just saw Jan Lennard Struff put the sword through Borna Coric, a man that has silverware on his mind and the defence of it, the biggest title of his career. His only Masters 1000 title for Andrei Rublev. How is he feeling as he comes back to the scene of his greatest triumph?
Andrei Rublev, who's your Monte Carlo champion.
He closed it out in emphatic fashion, his first Masters 1000 title.
The guy is a very underrated competitor, knocking on the door for a long time. It's always nice to see process rewarded.
Tears of joy, so much to celebrate.
Yeah, they certainly didn't need to water the court with the hoses, as you can see in the background there. He was doing it through the tears in his eyes. Tears of joy for him last year as we take a look. It didn't start promisingly, losing the opening set to Jaime Munar, but then super impressive against the likes of Hashinov, Struff, Taylor Fritz, of course, in the semis here last year, and again a three-setter, and then taking down Holger Rune in that particular final. Andy, obviously you had a golden summer back in 2003. You then had to try and defend the US Open title 2004, also the Canadian Masters, which I believe you made the final. What is it like coming back to try and defend these massive titles?
I don't know. I always kind of get in arguments with people because they wait till February to defend something when points in October count for the same. I never really thought about it that much, honestly. For Rublev, I think the bigger deal is breaking through last year and actually knowing that the ceiling might be a little bit higher in these big events at the Grand Slams. I think it more than anything, the trade-off is for the belief system. So I can't be told that if he makes, you know, semis or finals here that he didn't do his job and he didn't have a great week. You know, if it's win or bust, that creates a little bit of a negative type pressure set. But listen, it will be important for him to play well here just because he needs to get off to a good start in the clay court season.
Yeah, mindset is everything. Interesting listening to doing some of the foreign press getting translated this week, Paul. He was talking about the fact that his self-esteem is a little low because he feels that he's one of the most inconsistent members of the top 10. Is that how you see Andre?
Inconsistent?
Inconsistent.
No, I think he's one of the most consistent. I think he's been in the top 5, top 10 for a long time now. I think where he's been inconsistent is the highest level of events, and I think maybe that's where his disappointment is. So winning here last year, to me, is a huge catalyst for him. Next step is trying to do it at a major as well. But I'm so on board with the Andy Roddick methodology. I don't believe in the word defending. I mean, if he doesn't win, they're not taking away his title last year. And I think it's part of the people around him and part of his team to help whoever you're with to have players understand it's about accumulation. It's about what's next. It's about opportunity. It's not what you've done. Whether it's good or bad, they're not taking that away. If it's good, they're not erasing it if it's bad. So you have to be forward thinking. Otherwise, it builds too much pressure. And I think if he's in that right mindset, the guy's too good to not continually have great success. Whether it's this week or not, I don't know. But I think his goal right now should be continue to try to put himself moving forward, particularly at the majors and the biggest events like this one.
And Andy, we talk a lot about players not standing still. Even if you're standing still, you're going backwards, you're stagnating. If you look at Andre compared to some of the other players that have been out there trying to do things, do you feel he's made enough improvements in various parts of his game, or do you feel that is a part that has stood still a little bit too much?
Well, I don't think it's quite that easy, Petch, because what he does well is crack the ball from the baseline and stay up in the court, right? Is he all of a sudden going to be a guy who can serve 145? I don't think so. Is he going to be a guy who can move around the court like an Alcaraz? So what he has to be careful of is getting so far outside of his comfort zone, trying to solve for three, four, maybe five guys in the world that he stops beating the guys 30, which he regularly does the job he needs to. Maybe it's a switching of directions more often early in rallies. Maybe it's playing against movement more often. I think it's probably a little bit more strategic at this point. I don't see a lot of very obvious places for Rublev, you know, to get faster or serve bigger. You know, for me, he can strike it so well. So how do you apply what you do well in specific matchups? But, you know, I don't know that I would get completely carried away. There's some stuff. Some people are just faster than others. Some people just serve bigger than others.
Yeah, some great insights from both Paul and Andy there. Lovely to hear, and hopefully Andre can hear that as well and feel a little more confident as he goes about the defence of his title. Let's get you through to the social net. And as we teased right at the start of this show, one of the players that has been a real lighthouse for American women's tennis in recent times over the last 12 months, Taylor Townsend, new career high in the singles of 57 in the world. She's just 3 months shy of 28. She picked up her fifth doubles title down in Adelaide with Haddad Meyer. Andy, it's been spectacular. See, you talk about getting outside your comfort zone. It feels as though Tay-Tay has.
Tej, this is so simple. Like, the solution is so obvious. Every person who gets to a career high ranking, what do? They go work at Tennis Channel first. Eubanks, all of a sudden, Wozniacki decided, you know, like, I'm just going to come back and make the second week of a slam again. Taylor Townsend up to 57 in the world. Heck, I might quit Tennis Channel just to give it a run. I don't know. Me and Anna Cohn, Olympics 24, let's go.
We got to keep it realistic, at least for me. I think those days have passed. But for you, probably not. But for Taylor Townsend, to me, this is so rewarding for her because I've always felt like she's top five, top 10 racket skills for sure on the women's tour. She can do so many things with that magic wand in her hand around the net, creates a lot of discomfort for her opponent. So this is a long time coming. I could not be happier for her. And that photo right there is awesome, by the way.
Andy, I think you missed one thing out. I think all of those three have worked with me. I think that's the thing.
If there you go.
If this is what my life's become.
He was trying to be nice, Pat.
That's not. I thought about it, but I'm pretty confident that's not it, Pat.
I agree with you. Right, let's take a look at what's coming up on Wednesday. 5 a.m. Eastern time. Live tennis gets back underway. We got a bit of TC Live at 1 p.m. Eastern. The guys will be joining me. We've got on-court coverage. And, of course, we've got hot shots and some of the biggest matches will be previewed. Viewing them in the next segment coming up. Welcome back as ever. Hot shot of the day, Andy.
Yeah, you know what? This one, it's like, I don't know, is this shot on like an iPhone pitch? Is this what we're looking at here? I think I see it. I see an overhead and I see someone. I think the ball went past him. Let's see if we can get a better look. Let's see. Wait, I have
Let's
a feeling.
Zoom in. Let's zoom in.
I have a feeling this is going to get better. There we go. Now we can actually see what's happening. So Jari, obviously an easy put away, but you can't teach 6'7" pitch, Jari. We've seen this one. I've seen this one up close and personal with Roger, but that was a pretty good from the backhand side.
Yeah, I still remember that smash he beat you with in Basel all those years ago. Sorry to remind you of that one. Rublev up against Popperin. We've got an absolute blockbuster with Sinner and Korda. We've got Monfils and Medvedev. We're going to chat about those two matches in just a moment. Olga Runa up against one of the great stories, Sumit Nagel, who had $900 about a year ago in his bank account, is suddenly qualifying for Masters 1000. Not only that, but also winning matches as well. The dollars are coming, the wins are coming, and of course tomorrow will be followed once again by TC Live, if the boys can come back with me, as we head over to Monte Carlo, where the Prince and Princess of Tennis Channel are awaiting us.
All right, Petch, back here at our Tennis Channel FanDuel desk. Prakash, the lone American, still in the draw. Sebi Korda going up against the hottest player on tour in Yannick Sinner. Does he have a shot?
Well, the good news for the American is he does have a win over Sinner. He picked it up last year, but it was on hard courts. A little bit of a different story here, even though Sebi is comfortable on the clay. I just think the way Sinner is playing, he's certainly the big favorite. But Sebi, to have a great shot, he's going to have to serve big, as he did in his opening round.
Looking forward to exciting Wednesday action here in the south of France.
Yeah, absolutely can't wait for this. Andy, take your pick. What do you want to talk about there first about the Sinner-Korda matches? What are we looking for?
Well, Sinner and Korda, I mean, it's going to be, I think it's going to rely on Sebi's serve, right? If Sinner gets enough looks where he is just pound, once he gets a hold of that first ball and has the first strike, he rarely loosens his grip, especially these days. I'd like to see Korda go line a bunch, not let kind of Sinner get stuck in the middle of that and distribute. I think he probably has to play a higher risk profile than he normally likes. But listen, Korda goes 1-2 today against Davidovich Fokina. He seems to like playing the big players. He's beaten Medvedev multiple times. So this will be a fun one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Paul, how do you see it?
Yeah, look, I think that Seb's got to try to find a way to beat Sinner to the punch. You know, every second serve look he gets early on, got to be aggressive on second serve returns and the first strike in the rally, and make sure you do a good job protecting your serve. I serve a lot at the body, particularly at second, so that you don't let Sinner get stretched out and really let those arms get going, because he's hitting the ball too big now, as Andy's talking about. Get control of the rally, beat him to the punch, and high first serve percentage.
Yeah, that one's got everything that you're going to love about a tennis match. And then you got the uniqueness that's coming up in the double M encounter between Monfils and Medvedev. He's a sleeper on the clay, Medvedev, isn't he, Andy?
Well, he is a sleeper now. I thought I had it all figured out, that he just wasn't that good on clay, comparable to what he is on other surfaces. And then he goes and wins Rome last year. So, heck, Petch, I don't know, man. You know, one thing I do know is it's tough to beat Daniil Medvedev when you're not going through him, right? When you're not out and out power like a Sinner was in Miami, or an Alcaraz can do it, or a Novak can step inside the court and switch directions. Monfils is going to have to play more aggressively than he wants to. You know, this cat and mouse that Gael is so great at, Daniil's kind of better. It's like, you know, it's like when I used to hit a slice against people at work, and then I would play, you know, Roger or Murray, and I had nothing to go to because they just did it better. Right. So it takes away your strength by virtue of him having time. Tough to go through him, tough to go around him. But I'll be interested to see what Gael comes out with.
Yeah, I think Andy's exactly right. He's got to do what he doesn't like to do, Monfils. He's got to try to come forward, and he's got to put some pressure on Medvedev, try to attack Medvedev's second serve. And Gael, maybe he'll be a little tired, which will make him play more offensive tennis. I think that's when he plays his best tennis anyway, and tomorrow's a necessity.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. So many great matches coming up on Tennis Channel. Still some great matches on T2 as well. Live right now is Musetti up against Feast. Musetti knocked out Djokovic. And as my thanks to Andy and Paul, they'll go and check with their lawyers whether they're contractually obliged to come back tomorrow. I hope you will too, though. We'll see you soon.